Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century. We're back. It's 13 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our special guest is our regular weekly visitor to the show, Doug Stiers. Welcome back.
Well, good morning. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. And folks, Doug is a CPA, a certified public accountant. He received his bachelor's degree from and his MBA from Lehigh University. He is began his career at Price Waterhouse and then joined Kirchen & Company not long after that. And he's currently the head of the tax department at Kirchen & Company, which is one of the largest CPA firms in central New Jersey. Doug is a frequent lecturer for several New Jersey organizations. He's very active in the New Jersey CPA Society and also the American Institute for Certified Public Accountants. And he is often quoted and published in various other media around the country. But what I'm the most excited about is Doug is a member of the Small Business Advocate Brain Trust, and he's been with me now for several weeks helping you and I to understand how to better read and understand our financial statements. And Doug, we've talked over the last few weeks. We started with the balance sheet. We went through the assets. We went through the liabilities portion, and we went through the equities portion. And last week, we talked about we got into the operating statement, or as you and I have said, the income statement or the P&L, depending on how far back you go in business. If you go way back, you call it a P&L, don't you?
Absolutely. That's about the oldest term that I can come up with, but we still use it all the time.
Yeah, sometimes. And they're interchangeable, folks. You're not incorrect if you call it a P&L, are you?
Well, you're not current, but you're not incorrect either.
Right. And it might date you a little bit.
That's all right.
It might let people know. It's going to be hard, folks. It's going to be hard to tell them that you're 29 if you say P&L. They're going to know you're 49 or 50.
I'm not going to touch that one, Jeff.
Yeah, so ladies, if you're trying to guard your age, be sure not to say P&L. Be sure to say operating statement. Get with it a little bit.
Okay.
All right, Doug. Last week we were finishing up with the top portion of the operating statement, which we talked about the revenues first, and then we moved into the cost of goods sold. And one of the last things we were talking about is the bottom line of the middle portion. Now, I really shouldn't say bottom line, but the line in the middle, basically kind of the middle of the operating statement, which is the gross profit section.
Yeah.
Which is you get that figure from subtracting the cost of goods sold from the net sales, right?
Yes, right. And many people believe that the gross profit number is the most important number on the entire statement that we're discussing, Jim.
Why do they say that?
Well, if I'm trying to find out how my firm is doing here, yes, of course I look at my sales number, but even if my sales are down, if my gross profit is up or strong, I'll be very happy to write less business as long as I can bring that gross profit in. If you're in a retail store, and you can get your gross profit from 2% to 3% or 20 to 30%, your sales can drop and you still make more money.
Exactly. And, another thing, obviously operating expenses are very important, keeping those in line. And obviously operating expenses can vary widely sometimes, but typically your rent's not going to change that much, your utilities are not going to change that much, your gasoline expenses are not going to change that much. Most of your other expenses, your regular operating expenses, are not going to change all that much. But because business is conducted every day and week and month in your business, and it could be because people are out there, employees are out there making deals or whatever might happen or however you manage your purchases, your gross profit can vary a lot more widely than your operating expenses.
Oh, sure. And another side comment there, Jim, is once you kind of settle in with your regular operating expenses, or what some people refer to as overhead, your rent and your telephone and a couple people to run your office, that's not going to change too much. But the point I'm trying to make is that you'll start making money just as soon as you can get your gross profit above your operating expenses. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, the gross profit figure is your profit margin. And that's something I really think is important for us to take just a moment to talk about, Doug, because a lot of times there are a lot of people out there, believe it or not, I don't know whether you've run into this, but I sure have, people who don't understand the difference between margin and markup.
Well, I think some people use the terms interchangeably.
But it's not. But that's incorrect, isn't it?
Right, and you need to put yourself on an even playing field. But I always say to people, okay, you want to talk even gross profit or gross margin, or to use your terms, margin or markup. You know, let's agree what that means. You know, what's our formula to come up with one of those numbers?
Well, here's why I bring this up at this point, Doug. Let's say that we've got a business person who is calculating markup, which is multiplying the percentage times your cost. In other words, if you want a 30% markup, if they say they want to mark up, then they multiply 30% times their cost, and whatever that number is that's their answer to that calculation, then they say that that's their sale price. And so then when they do their financial statement, and their margin their gross profit margin, it's like 26% or 24%. They don't understand it.
Right.
And it's because margin and markup are different.
Depends which way you're going. You're going up or down. Just to go back to your example, Jim, if I buy something for $10 and I mark it up 30%, again, I'll say that word, mark it up 30%, I'm going to sell that $10 cost item for $13.
Right.
Then I go the other way, and you tell me, well, look, I've already decided I'm going to sell it for $13 because that's the suggested retail price or whatever, and the cost is $10. Well, then what's my margin? Well, it's not 30% anymore.
That's right. In fact, folks, just to make it a little more dramatic, if you have a $10 item and you mark it up 30%, you have a $3 gross profit. If you have a 30% margin, you sell that product for $14.29. That's $1.30 more, almost $1.29 more sale price, because you used a 30% margin rather than a 30% markup.
And it's amazing. I've sat with people sometimes in the same industry, sometimes within the same company, that one says, well, I made 23%. The other says, well, we're making 30%. They're saying the same thing, but they're using different numbers.
That's exactly right. All right, Doug, stand by. We've got to take a break. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're getting jiggy with it with your financial statements. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, folks. 24 after the hour, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our special guest is our dedicated resident CPA of the Small Business Advocate Show, Doug Stives, and we couldn't do it without Doug. He's been very faithful to us for the last several weeks, and he's agreed to continue to do this, and I really want to take our hats off to you, Doug, for being so faithful to me and to the show and to our audience.
We've got everybody so confused they can't live without us, Jim.
I don't think so. I think we're making a difference here. And folks, if you'd like to join us, if you have a question, and listen, don't wait to the end of the hour. The last two or three days or week, or last week or so, we've had so many people, Doug, call us at the end of the hour and make a comment. Folks, call us now. If you've got something to say, don't wait till the end of the hour. That's when we're winding things up then. We don't have time to talk to you then.
You mean they're saying stuff we can put on the air?
Yeah.
That's the first time that's ever happened to me.
Imagine that. Yeah, 888-822-8255. That's the phone number to call, folks, and it's 1-888-822-8255. And also my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. While you're there, you can find out how to contact Doug if you want to do that. By the way, Doug, why don't you tell us, give our audience your number and any other information you'd like in case they would like to contact you for a second opinion on their financial information or their accounting, or if they have a consulting project they'd like to ask you about.
Sure. Just any comments at all. I, you know, don't mind taking phone calls. I'm in central New Jersey, as Jim mentioned at the top of the hour, and the phone number here is area code 732-747-0500.
All right. Thanks, Doug. Doug, one of the things that I want to just mention this a little bit more about the gross margin. I don't know how many times I've had people say, you know, Jim, I don't understand why I'm not being profitable, because I know what my industry marks up their products to, and it's like a 30% or 20% or whatever. That's my industry markup, and that's what I'm getting. and I don't understand why I'm not being profitable. I work so hard, and I just come up short every month. And I say, okay, well, tell me how you're calculating that. And they multiply in a markup, as they said, a markup, instead of dividing by the reciprocal of the number that they want, which means that if you want a 30% markup, I mean, I'm sorry, 30% margin, you divide by 70%. Divide that into the sale price, I mean the purchase price of your products, the cost of your material, the cost of your services. Doug, any comments on that?
I'm staying right with you.
Am I on my own here?
You didn't say anything wrong yet.
Okay, well...
You know, I think what we said a few minutes ago before the break is gross profit is really what drives the whole thing. As I tell you, the biggest mistake I see, Jim, is people just don't compute the gross profit correctly. You're pointing out that, you know, they're mixing apples with oranges, but mm-hmm. what I see happen even more is people say, well, you know, we're making a 30% markup or write down or whatever word you like here, mm-hmm. but gross profit is the term I use. But, you know, we're just not making any money, and we go into it and find out that they don't have accurate inventory numbers. We
right.
could talk about last week. If your inventory numbers are out of whack, then your gross profit's going to be out of whack by the same amount.
Right, exactly. All right, Doug, let's move over into the operating, the expense portion of the operating statement, of the income statement.
Great.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Now, folks, these items are typically represented, and if you're doing the bookkeeping, they're typically represented in your chart of accounts, aren't they?
Supposed to be.
Yeah. So
usually down towards the bottom to yeah. you know, help people identify with where we are.
Right. And these items, there are a lot of different things, and we're going to kind of go down through here so you can identify some of the things that are in here. And it's really important, especially if you are starting a new business and you're doing a budget. One of the things that happens, Doug, when I talk to people who are bringing me a new business and they've got a budget, they don't have all the things that they need in that budget. They've forgotten about things. And so the best way to me to if you want to establish a budget for your business, get someone, find some friends who will let you look at their operating, that at least the operating expense portion of their operating statement, so you can see what kind of expenses businesses really have.
Vitally important. I think I commented a couple of weeks ago, Jim, is that I have never yet seen anybody achieve their budget or their plan. So
right.
when we do this with people, we'll start at the very bottom. The most important expense you should have in your budget is, guess what? Contingencies, things that are unanticipated, they happen.
That's exactly right. All right, what is the first thing that you typically see at the top of the expense portion of an operating statement?
For most of our small businesses, it's salaries. In fact, the format that we use here in our firm, Jim, is we usually put the operating expenses in descending order. And in more cases than not, your salaries are going to be your most expensive or your highest.
Descending order in terms of value.
Right.
Yeah. All right, folks, Doug, stand by. We've got to take a break. It's 29 after the hour. Folks, I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Doug Stiles and I will be right back after these messages. Stay with us. All right. Welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. And our special guest is our good friend, Doug Stiles. He's the Small Business Advocate's resident certified public accountant. He's the manager of the tax department at Kirchen & Company, one of the largest CPA firms in central New Jersey. And we are doing the never-before-attempted feat of helping you to understand your financial statements, to read and understand your financial statements over the radio. And we are working, but ladies and gentlemen, without a net. I just wanted you to know that at any point in time, we could, either one of us could result in serious bodily harm to either one of us. So I want you to appreciate the effort we're making here. And the phone number is 888-822-TALK, 1-888-822-8255. Doug, let's continue to go down through the literally talking about the items that are on the expense portion of an operating statement. What you said earlier was that you like to see the operating statement listed in descending order in the amount of the based on the amount of the expense.
Right. It's just the format that we generally use here. Some people put it in alpha order, some people put it, you know, by department or reporting category or whatever, but
a lot of times there is virtually no basis for the way they do it. Typically,
nope.
You do see salaries at the top. You're right.
Typically, right.
But a lot of times, I've seen a lot of statements from there on down, I should say, there's no rhyme or reason.
Nope, just whatever order the bookkeeper threw them on the paper or whatever order they're in the chart of accounts.
I think that's what it is. I think it's depending on how they chose to assign numbers to the chart of accounts.
Right, and I'm going to smile when I say this. It's just like they teach us when you go to high school and college, is who you're writing to. You know, you're going to make a report to a board of directors, and they don't want to see the fact that you spent too much on advertising. Well, you're going to stick that down the bottom because you might not ever get there.
Exactly. That's good. That's a good point, Doug. That's a very good point. Okay, so we got salaries, but now we want to break these salaries out a couple of ways, don't we?
Well, sometimes. I mean, I use my own firm. We're a CPA firm, and we have three lines on our income statement for salaries. We have owner salaries, or we call ourselves partners here, and then we have professional staff salary, and then we have administrative staff salary. That's a nice word for secretaries.
All right. Now, do you also recommend that we break out the overhead for salaries?
Yes.
In other words, so you have the salary. Folks, we have the actual salary that's paid, but then below those, you actually list the payroll overhead.
Right. I mean, just we usually put it into name categories such as payroll tax expense.
Right.
You know, the employer's share, the Social Security and the unemployment and all those other nuisance taxes that we pay. And then usually your fringe benefits. And again, if that's significant, sometimes we break it out, health insurance, life insurance, or just lump it all together.
And if you have commission salespeople, you have a commission line there.
And just a comment there is sometimes commissions is going to go up top in your cost of sales because it is a direct variable expense that's going to go up and down with your sales. So
very good point. Very good point. And I agree with you. It just depends on how you want to manage that information.
Right.
Okay, now then, what's next? What would you put after that?
Typically, your occupancy expenses. And again, sometimes we'll put a header in there, say occupancy expenses, colon, and then list underneath it rent, utilities, if property taxes are separate or whatever the situation is.
Right.
You know, what it costs you to keep your store or your office or your plant open. But that's what occupancy costs.
Janitorial.
Yeah.
Garbage removal.
Maintenance and repair. Comment there, if your janitors are on your payroll, well, then they're going to be up top in your payroll expense.
Exactly. But our pest control would be there, like that.
Yeah.
What are some other?
We don't have pest control. We don't have pest control in New Jersey.
Well, unless an attorney shows up.
that's under shark expense.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Utilities. What about telephone? Would that be an occupancy?
Sometimes, if you're just running an office and telephone is a minor expense, but if you're running a telemarketing firm, that's going to be probably right at the top of the list telephone expense.
Okay, then what's next? Maybe office supplies?
Office supplies, I think we mentioned if we didn't, repairs and maintenance. And again, I'd say for a second time, if some of these items are really significant, they're going to be broken out in a couple of details.
Right.
And as we mentioned also a few minutes ago, is who's reading this? You know, if you're making a presentation to the director of maintenance, you don't want to just give him one line, repairs and maintenance. You want to break it right on down there by location and by individual sometimes.
A couple of other things. A lot of times you see legal and accounting or professional fees. I like to see those two separated. I don't like to see legal accounting on the same line because I want to know what you're paying for a lawyer and what you're paying for an accountant.
Well, we always do that because we like to point out how inexpensive we are relative to our lawyer friends.
It's to your advantage, right?
Yeah.
If you're in control of the statements, you can do that.
We're jostling the attorneys. We can't work without them, frankly. You know,
I know.
They make our business click, but we do tease them.
It's fun to tease them, though, isn't it?
I get a referral in here from an attorney. I can charge ridiculous rates because I look cheap alongside of them.
Oh, yeah. It's fun to tease them. And they're usually pretty good-natured about it.
They just keep running the bill up. That's okay.
That's right.
I'm good-natured when I'm getting paid, too, Jim.
Yeah, listen, if you harass them much, they put a harassment factor on your bill. I've seen that happen before.
Yeah.
In fact, I learned how to do that in my consulting business from an attorney.
No comment.
I'm sure accountants never do that, though. They never add a harassment factor.
I'm being serious as I say this, but you mentioned separate legal and accounting. You know, frankly, sometimes we try to bury our accounting fee in there somewhere. So we will just say legal and accounting, or even more generically, professional fees.
Right. And folks, that's perfectly fine. When I say I like to see it separate, that's for management purposes, not for reporting purposes. It's not necessary to separate them for official reporting purposes. All right, folks, it's 39 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Doug Stives, the resident CPA here at the Small Business Advocate Show. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, folks. It's 44 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is our good friend Doug Stives. He's with the Kirchen & Company, which is a CPA firm out of Red Bank, New Jersey. They do good work up there, and Doug is the head of the tax department at Kirchen & Company. And Doug is the resident CPA here at the Small Business Advocate Show. He's a member of our Brain Trust, and we couldn't do without him. And we're still working the high wire here, helping you understand your financial statements, and we're still working without a net. So far, no one's gotten hurt, and that's our goal here today, is for no one to get hurt. Right, Doug?
We're going to try not to.
Hey, Doug, let's get back to the operating statement here, and let's continue to go on down the list here of things that you'll see. You're going to see, we've already talked about rent. You mentioned advertising a minute ago.
Yep.
Advertising and promotion, sometimes you see those things together. I like to see those separated, too.
Sure, yeah. Well, again, where it's significant. I mean,
right.
If it's, you know, less than 1% of your sales,
right,
you're not going to make a big deal about it.
Right, but if you've got $10,000 worth of advertising and $5,000 worth of promotion, I want to see those things separated.
Right. But another comment while we're on separating things, Jim, is what I mentioned last week. What I try to do is make my operating statement about five lines. You know, sales, cost of sales, gross profit, operating expenses all in one line, and then come up with my profit or loss. And then an attached schedule, you know, see for actual A1 or whatever it is that says operating expenses. And then if it's appropriate, go even beyond that. Come to what we talked about before the break. Occupancy expenses, well, that's Schedule C, and you go there and it breaks it out in minute detail.
I'm glad to hear you say that. Thank you for bringing that up, because I have seen that as well. Typically, you don't see it that way, except maybe at year-end statements.
It just depends. Again, depends on who's reading it, who's using it. And it has been proven that if you put more than about 20 lines on a sheet of paper, people are not going to read every line.
But typically, an interim statement, aren't you going to see an interim statement more traditionally like we're talking about?
Yes, sure.
Okay, yeah.
Sure.
But I agree with you, and I think that is a good way to do it. As you say, it depends on the purpose of the document.
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump over to something a little different is when I teach people how to do tax returns. I say, well, now, Doug, you know, should I break this out? I say, well, you know, if it's going to help us, yeah. If it's something we're not really anxious to wave in front of the IRS, we'll stick it somewhere else. I hate to use the word, but the word we use is bury it.
Right, exactly. I'm going to go down through two or three of the quick, I'm going to go down through a few of the quick things that I don't want to talk about much, just to mention them, and then come back to some things that I do want to spend a little bit of time on. Another one is security. If you have any kind of security firm that you use, uniforms, we already talked about garbage removals a little bit. Miscellaneous is always in there. If miscellaneous is a lot of money, Doug, then we got a situation where we need to be identifying some of that,
yeah,
don't we?
That's something you don't do. You don't do it on a tax return or a financial statement. That's the first thing. Again, if you're sitting across from an owner or a board of directors, you got, you know, $69,000 in miscellaneous, the first thing I'm going to say is, what's that involved?
Exactly. Now, when we say a little bit, we're talking, you know, depending on the amount of volume that you've got. You know, if you've got $500 or $1,000 or something in miscellaneous in a company that does $1 million or $2 million in revenue a year, then that's not too much.
No, but it shouldn't be a big number. And with computers and all the details, you know, break it out.
Right. On telephone, do you like to see the telephone broken out, the actual cost broken out, and then the yellow pages put up in advertising? What do you like to see?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And,
but your telephone bill, typically, folks, will come, especially if you do business with the yellow pages, the regular, the old-fashioned yellow pages, that'll typically come all together in one bill, won't it?
Sure. Oh, yeah. But it's very easy to break it out. It's usually itemized on there.
Right.
I have some clients where telephone is significant. They'll break out long distance versus local service.
Right. All right. Let's talk about depreciation.
Yeah.
Because that's something we've talked about over in the balance sheet.
Okay. You know, another area where you can go in about eight different directions is, you know, what type of depreciation are you going to use? And most people probably know under the tax law today you can write off a whole bunch of stuff in one year. But then when you go to your financial statements, if you're, say, you've gone out and bought $10,000 worth of computers and you're going to write that off for taxes all in one year, even though computers depreciate very quickly, we still would typically set that up for at least 3, maybe 5, or maybe as long as 7 years, depending on what that company's experience has been with computers.
Right.
And just to make sure everybody knows what we're talking about, depreciation, you're charging off the purchase cost of whether it's a vehicle or desks and chairs or shelving in a warehouse or whatever it is, something that retains some value. What you're doing is charging depreciation for each period or each year that item is in service, And it's usually a formula you do it by. There's straight line depreciation where you write off the same amount each month or each year. And there are some other types of depreciation known as accelerated depreciation where you kind of front-end load that depreciation charge.
And that's an animal that's there because of tax purposes, for tax purposes.
Well, that's usually what drives it. And frankly, for most of our small businesses, we take depreciation on the financial statements at the same rate we're doing it for tax purposes.
Right, exactly. All right, and Doug, we've got to take a break here in a minute. Before we do, I want to talk about one other thing real quickly, and that's something called amortization.
Yeah, amortization, some people intermix that term with depreciation, but the definition really is an amortization charge is writing off the cost of an intangible, such as if you buy a company and you pay cost for something called goodwill, you're going to amortize that as opposed to depreciating it because it's not a tangible item.
Exactly, or you might see it on a real estate financial statement for fees that you pay.
Yes, again, intangible expenses.
Exactly. All right, folks, it's 50 after. We're going to take a quick break and be right back with our good friend Doug Stives. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It's 54 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our special guest is our good friend Doug Stives. We're talking about how to read and understand your financial statements. So far, no one has gotten hurt. Hope you're okay out there in radio land. And Doug, let's finish up the hour talking about two or three things that are really important on the financial statement. One of them is travel and entertainment.
Yeah, well, travel and entertainment
the operating statement
becomes a very, very difficult area when you're getting examined by the IRS because it's the first place agents go. But that's not our topic for this morning. I think it's important to point out that in many businesses, travel and entertainment is almost non-existent. But certainly for a firm like mine and anybody who's involved with any kind of selling, that number can get pretty darn high, and from a management point of view, you need to manage that number. If people are running around the country with credit cards and company vehicles, that number is going to get out of control real fast. So let's assume that it is a significant number. What we generally do, again, is come up with some detailed backup as, you know, how much is mileage reimbursement, how much is hotels, airfares,
right,
if you're involved with interstate travel, and many, many companies spend a lot of money, and there's some very interesting software out there that will help you manage this stuff.
And Doug, let me interrupt you for a second and tell you a horror story. I have a client who was audited over several years, and because he and his salespeople were not able to, they had the expenses, and they were on the credit cards and all that, but because they did not have receipts that detailed what those expenses, what the purposes of those expenses were for, the date that they were used, the person that they met with and bought the lunch for, the purpose of that meeting, because all of that was not available, he had a $53,000 charge from the IRS.
That is very typical, and clearly, Jim, we can probably do a couple of shows on that whole area.
Yeah.
For the IRS junkies or the Internal Revenue Code junkies out there, we're talking about Section 274D. First thing they teach every IRS agent, they come in, and we don't care if you travel, we want to see your records.
Right. And folks, we're going to talk more about that in later shows, but we just wanted to point out that if you've got meals and entertainment or travel and expense and entertainment, please do a good job of keeping good records.
You cannot over-document that area.
That's right.
Another quick sidebar before we move on is remember that meals and entertainment are only half deductible, so all the more reason to control these numbers and
right,
make sure your financial statements give you enough detail so that you can keep them under control.
Right. What are some other key components of the operating expenses?
Okay, most companies have at least one vehicle that they're carrying. I mean, even something as basic as, say, a doctor's office, the guy has his Mercedes on the books typically, and we're taking depreciation on it, or if it's a lease, we're deducting the lease to the extent that the law permits. And what I suggest on an income statement, again, just like with your travel and entertainment, car and truck expense can get out of hand real quickly. It's amazing what people will spend on vehicles, and it can show up like a red herring sitting on that income statement. So it's a big percentage of your sales, and you need to
right,
get it under control.
Exactly. Doug, quickly, let's talk about bonuses. We've got about 20 seconds.
What I try to do in my own financial statements is break out your bonuses. If you're having a good year and you're going to take a $50,000 bonus, it should be broken out so it doesn't get just buried in your salary expense.
Right. For one thing, that's to be used next year when you're comparing this year to last year.
Yeah, and this is the time of year. We're coming down to the end of 1998. You're hopefully going to be sitting with an accountant, and you're going to be looking at, what are you going to do with that profit? Because you sure as heck don't want to pay tax on it. If you're a corporation, you don't want to pay double tax on it. If
Absolutely.
You're a C corporation, that is.
Absolutely. Add. Doug, we've got to wrap it up. Thank you very much for being with us. Looking forward to next week already.
Okay.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
Okay. See you later, Doug. All right, folks, I got to wrap it up. Before I go, I want to thank some very important people, some folks I couldn't do without. John, good job today, man. And also, I want to thank the most important members of the Small Business Advocate Show, my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work...
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.